Then in between that, sheep farming in the Falkland Islands from Crass. And that was for Charles Lawson, who plays Jim McDonald on Coronation Street. I love playing these requests. And then before that, the Icicle Melts of Cranberries, Noni Crete, Old Jack from Girl in a Crazy World. I know Noni's playing somewhere this weekend with everybody down in Guelph. I think they have a big do going on. Don't have the information with me, but maybe I'll find it before the end of the show. And then before that, Lynn Miles, Love Sweet Love. She was just at the Registry Theatre on the weekend. So I thought I would play some of her work, and apparently it was an amazing show. So now I'm switching gears entirely, and I have Ted Harms in the studio here from the VOC Silent Harmonic.
Sorry for the audio.
Silent Film Harmonic.
Sorry for the audio whiplash.
The audio whiplash.
To change gears so drastically.
Well, I'm used to doing it, actually. So it's not a problem at all. So you're here to talk about...
I'm here. I'm back.
Yeah, you're back. To talk about Buster Keaton shorts.
Buster Keaton shorts this Friday at the Registry, 8 p.m.
Okay.
$15 at the door. You can even get advance tickets at the center in the square.
Okay.
But the awesome deal is $10 with a food bank donation.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So, you know, can of beans, box of macaroni and cheese, some kind of crazy Bengali bits and bites that you picked up at the unknown variety store, you know, around the corner.
Yeah.
Drop that in, $10, and you're in. And if you're a high school student, $5 I go.
It's an I go show. That's
yes,
very
it is.
Cool. Yeah,
it is. So
I think I go is one of the best things ever invented
in the world
for audiences. I really do. What was I going to say here? There's so many Buster Keaton shorts.
He did about 144 movies.
Yeah.
All totaled. I think you've probably got about 8 or 9 features in there.
Mm-hmm.
The General and Sherlock Jr. and all that. But, I mean, the bulk of them are these two reelers that are just absolutely hilarious. And, I mean, he's turning them out, I don't want to say at an unforgiving rate, but, I mean, good God, probably, I don't know, one a month at least. I mean, he had to keep, you know.
There are so many. There's like the Blacksmith, Paleface, Daydreams, the Goat, the Scarecrow, Cops, la 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 la.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Let's just and
Lunatic, and, which was pretty funny.
And they're all screamingly funny. I mean, it's you know that well just did not run dry.
Yep.
And I mean they're. It's not just sight gags after sight gags, but I mean, it's like physical comedy. And I mean, yeah, the guy knew how to take a fall, had to learn at a pretty early age as he was part of a vaudeville act with his parents.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, just the abuse. I mean, you see people nowadays who, you know,
I don't know if people could handle that.
Oh no.
You know, he was in such great physical shape.
Well, yeah, it's just he was just trained. He just knew how to do it. I mean, every now and again you see a little bit. There's one section in 1 week where he jumps out of the second floor the door of the house, mm-hmm. which you know in the house it's been misbuilt. But you see him jump out of the second floor door and lands. And just as the dust hits, you see that there's a mattress or some kind of cushion underneath all the dirt. But you just see that for, you know, for a second. And that in the five films that that we're doing, I think is the only kind of prop or, heaven forbid, safety feature that I saw. I mean, everything else. I mean, there's no wires. There's no...
Nope.
Computer generated, you know, matrix, you know, gee whiz animation. It's all real people doing absolutely just crazy stuff.
And he wrote a lot of these himself too, with a guy named Eddie Klein. Was
Eddie
that, right?
Klein, who suffered a heart attack on one of his films. I forget what it was. I obviously one of his last ones because
yeah.
He suffered a heart attack and everybody said, no, I'm fine. Finished filming and then about like 3 days later dropped. So, but yeah, no, it's, you know, I'd like to actually see if they actually put out like a script for these things. Cause I think script wise, it must be relatively short because
mm-hmm.
there is a lot of action and it's a lot of clowning around and a lot of running around and mimicking and, you know, aping other people, aping the cops while he's trying to avoid them and all that. So, you know, these are not, you know, this isn't like a David Mamet play or anything like that,
no.
You know?
No.
18 pages of dialogue just to talk about going to get a coffee or something like that.
No, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure these out. They're lots of fun. Who did the original music? There's a guy named Robert Israel, I think. Did he do, some of the stuff that I saw, there's this weird organ music to it. What are you guys going to do with it?
Well, we are actually doing something a little bit different from what we've done in the past. For the previous movies, for Hands of Orlok or Pandora's Box, I'd kind of carve up the movie, here's the first scene we're all going to play. Here's some music for, inspiration and all that. And then, after that first scene, then it's just going to be, Wade, our guitarist, and it's going to be Dave, our clarinetist, and they're going to play for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then mm-hmm. someone else is going to come and all that. What we're doing for the Buster Keaton films is that we've actually learned honest to God songs. I know. This has probably been why we've been having 1,800 rehearsals, because normally we have two or three. It's close enough, but we kind of went through and kind of found some songs, more or less of the era, kind of early 20s songs.
Okay, yeah, because they all took place mostly in the early 20s.
And so these are all kind of you know quasi vaudeville.
Sort of like, Dixieland.
Thankfully, a lot of these songs are actually on archive.org because they're public domain. And it's recordings of the original Edison wax cylinders.
Is this what you brought on?
No, I did not bring any of the songs. So though actually I had that, I have, I've been driving around with my hands on the wheel, I've
golden earring.
The golden earring.
No, I don't think so.
I've been driving around all week with the CD in the car of all the songs, just so that I can kind of get them ingrained in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But it's songs that I don't think anybody is going to really know unless you're, over 100 years old or a vaudeville expert. It's Ain't We Got Fun and Dardanella. I'm Always Chasing Rainbows, which might be a little bit more familiar. A Wabash Blues, which actually a lot of people covered. Johnny Cash and Hank Williams, people like that, and then somehow I actually screwed up because the other song that we're doing is a Gershwin tune, which is about 15 years after these movies actually would have been made. I don't know what wires I got crossed, but we're doing They Can't Take That Away From Me.
Oh, I like that.
Well,
song.
See, but the thing is though, is that, and I don't want anybody, we are doing the VOC shambolization of these tunes as well.
Yeah, that's right, because there's a lot of improv.
And there's a lot of times when we're just, where we're talking, it's like, okay, we'll do a verse chorus, and then everyone just makes a noise for a little while, and then we'll go back. So, the tunes will crop up there and again. If you know the tune, hopefully you'll recognize it or you'll hear snippets of it. But mm-hmm. But that's what we're doing, which is a new chapter. It's almost like VOC Mark II, because
it's a bit different than what you were doing before.
Yes,
that's for sure. And
but it's still us.
And these films look great on the big on that 15x15 screen with that lovely black box space. Looks really cool.
Yeah, it's we do our best to find good quality transfers and all that. Some are better than others, unfortunately, just luck of the draw. Some have been digitally remastered or easier to get a hands on the digital masters than others. So they're all pretty good. They're going to look like perhaps as though they were originally shown, which is, they didn't have high def in 1921.
Nope. They sure didn't. Well, let's take a musical break. Okay. I'm really curious to see what the first song is.
There's three tunes on the CD. Mm-hmm. Just choose one randomly.
Well, I'm choosing number... Okay, hold on. I'm choosing number two.
Okay. I forget which one that is.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll play it, and then we can talk about it afterwards. So,
all right.
This is, I don't know what this is. A mystery tune. This is a mystery tune on Coral FM with my special guest, Ted Harms.
That just takes you just somewhere else. That was the song Brazil, which was the feature song on, well, I guess numerous films, but in the film Brazil by Terry Gilliam, which I remember seeing in the theater.
Yes. And
I'm going to have to say was probably the first film for me which actually said, wow, you know, this is a film. This isn't just, you know.
This isn't just.
This isn't just crap. This isn't just, yeah, you know.
I
straight up, you know, schlock or whatever. But here's something artful, and here's something with you know, an overall design and a look and a feel, and it's not just, you know, oh, here's a, you know, a Western or
no, here's a film that makes
but,
you
yeah.
It's funny because some people have different. Like, this is yours. This dates back a while. This is like, oh, I'm so old. God. when Graham Chapman was here for Monty Python, we got into a discussion about solo projects.
Okay.
And Brazil came up.
Oh, yeah.
And he went to see it and he didn't. He's like, I spent 2 hours in the theater wondering why the hell I'd spent 2 hours in the theater because he didn't get it. But maybe had he gone back to see it, he might have gotten more out of it. But at the time, he was like, oh, he didn't get it. I went to see it on the big screen, and I just remember Catherine. Oh, she was in Soap.
Yeah.
Catherine Hellman.
Catherine Hellman. Lillian Hellman. Hellman.
Was it Lily?
Lillian.
No. Catherine from Soap, the TV series Soap.
Yeah. No, okay. All right.
Yeah, she was in Brazil. Yeah. Pretty sure she was in Brazil.
She was the mother.
Jonathan
Pryce.
Yes, I love him. I think he's great.
And
who else was in?
Robert De Niro.
Yes, as
the renegade plumber. You had, I'm blanking on the Monty Python guy that was in it as the doctor.
Was it Michael Palin?
Palin?
I think it was Michael Palin. I'm not sure exactly because I haven't seen Brazil for a long, long time.
Yeah, but. It's a desert island movie for me.
Yeah.
It
was a little racer head dish for me too.
Is
it was kind of like I went,
Yeah, well, it's, It was really something. I mean, If you can find the book, The Battle for Brazil, you'll see the whole behind the scenes wrangling about it. The studio exec who ran over Ridley Scott and doing his own edit of Clash of Titans wanted to do the same to Terry Gilliam.
Gilliam, they don't like being edited.
Gilliam did not like that. He took out a full page article ad in Variety magazine. I'm trying to remember the guy's name, but he's, you know, he basically said, "Dear so and so, when will you release my movie Brazil?" Because Terry Gilliam was not playing nice. The studio guy said, "We're not going to release it unless I can do an edit," because he wanted it to have a happy ending.
Oh.
Which, when they showed it on American TV, that was the version that they showed, which is dubbed the Love Conquers All version.
Ooh.
And but Gilliam totally subverted it, was arranging clandestine showings of the movie at I think UCLA film classes, and all that, and then managed to get enough of the LA Film Critics Society to see it, and they voted it Film of the Year.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And it hadn't been released yet commercially, and which this basically forced the studio's hand.
Especially if they think it's going to be a commercial success.
Yeah.
Oh, we have to jump
so,
on that.
So suddenly, and it just kind of snowballed with a critical success. Here's this great movie that no one had seen, renegade British director against American studio, and all that. It did critically quite well. It wasn't a huge box office,
smash.
But then Terry Gilliam got to follow it up with, I believe it was the second biggest commercial flop of the year it was released, which was The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Yeah.
Which is such a lovely movie, too.
It is. It's a great movie. And Neville was in it. Neville was in it. And
A very young Uma Thurman.
Yeah, that's
was
right.
In it. Polly, what's her name? Canadian actress, Sarah Pauly.
Oh, Sarah Pauly was in it. That's right.
She's the daughter.
Yep.
Jonathan Pryce was in it again. Sting had a little two-line cameo.
Was Eric Idle in that too?
Sorry?
Was Eric Idle in Munchausen?
Yeah. He was the runner, Bertolt.
Yeah.
And all that. So yeah, and
yes,
I mean,
it rents out at the store. We like it. We like Terry Gilliam.
It was yeah. I mean yeah. And anyways, I believe the biggest commercial failure that year was Inchon, which was a retelling of the Douglas MacArthur story, but it was backed by Reverend Sung Young Moon, And so when word got out about that, no one went to see it. And but yet, you know, the Moonies went out and saw it, and the Reverend, I think, sunk millions of dollars into it. But
I thought you were going to say Ishtar.
That was earlier than
It was actually
than Munchausen. Anyways, but I mean Terry Gilliam. I mean the guy can just do. I mean, he can do cloud scenes like nobody other. He can do war and destruction scenes.
He can do films about like making films that are fun. He's, like the making of Le Mans of La Mancha. That was hilarious.
The Don Quixote movie. God. I mean, just to see a guy kind of fall apart was... Yeah. Like,
could anything else possibly happen to kind this of, film
kind
shoot?
Kind of cruel, but...
Everything was... That was a very entertaining movie. I felt really sorry for him, but it was really fun to watch.
Totally.
Let's rewind in movie history.
Okay. All right. Going way back.
Way back. Back to Buster Keaton.
Okay. Who?
Buster who? Yeah. Why did you guys pick Buster Keaton? And what do you like best about him? And how does he differ for you from Charlie Chaplin, who I love, and Harold Lloyd, who I really love?
Yeah. What is it about him? I don't know. It's just...
Sad. He's a sad.
Well, it's clown. there's that real kind of romantic whimsy.
Yeah.
Which I know is there in Chaplin. I mean Harold Lloyd not as much. I mean Lloyd was a lot more kind of more straight up laughs and all that. And I mean, you know, Chaplin didn't quite have the physicality of it. I mean he didn't really have, you know, as many stunts, which I know, you know, some people say, you know, well, it's a distraction and all that. But I mean, Keaton has, I don't know. I mean, I think he's just got that complete package of where he can do the physicality, you know, he can do the slapstick of the Keystone Cops and, you know, people like that. But also, I mean, there was enough, you know, emotional kind of not outpouring, but I mean enough, you know,
you could invest in him emotionally as well as comically, you know. I remember seeing when I saw the blacksmith, I thought, oh, he's doing his own stunts, you know, that's hilarious, like all that stuff, right? It's really cool.
Yeah. And I mean he's just I mean Chaplin and Lloyd and Buster have endured, and
Okay, here's something.
Uh-oh.
Speaking about, no, this is about the artist. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
And? Actually,
well, I thought it was, I quite liked it. It was kind of, I guess I'm not a good as prognosticator as you are, who almost swept your predictions.
Oscar predictions. It was pretty predictable, but, actually, when you think about it.
But I was, I caught it the Saturday night at the Princess before the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
And the place was packed. I mean, we thought, you know, everyone's seen it already. And, you know, we had to sit like third row from the front, you know, because, and people are saying, well, is this seat taken? Can I, you know, could you move over once so that I can, you know, but, again, I mean, you know, It was enough of modern tinges to it, you know, that I mean they weren't obviously trying to do a direct homage not direct copying.
It was almost like a hybrid, or I don't even know,
a little bit.
Like,
I don't want to give anything away, but there was that kind of dramatic scene at the end that, you know, they wouldn't have done anything close to that back in the 1920s. I mean, mostly probably because they had, I don't know what kind of, you know, rules they had. I mean, I don't know if there was the Motion Picture Association had like a little morality clause about, well, we can't show unsavory things and
possibly,
I know they did later on and all that, you know, they said, you know, we can't show bad guys profiting and all that. But I mean, overall, my favorite scene from The Artist was the actress. Sorry, blanking on her name. When she was in his dressing room, and it was this so wonderfully well done scene where she's somewhat in love with him, and she sticks her one hand in his jacket that's hanging on the coat hanger, and then the hand becomes him, and you know he's kind of moving up along her hips and all that, and you think, wow, I mean, I don't know how long they spent working on that scene, but it was just so whimsical, but yet, you know, not in a throwaway kind of sense.
Very stylish look to it. And the other thing is, I learned this years ago, it's much more expensive to film in black and white than it is in color.
Well, yeah, I mean they don't make black and white film anymore, so you shoot it in color, and then you have to wash it all out
and make sure it still looks and has that contrast to
you
it.
I know some of the, I mean, I assume they have it all worked out digitally now. But I know back when they were kind of washing out the color film, I mean the process was at times unpredictable.
Yeah, because you wouldn't be sure what you're going to get because it's all chemistry. So you might get something like a gray sepia or something like that. I guess this goes back to my graphic design. I'm thinking of the tertiary. I'm thinking of the grayscale here.
Yep. getting into the sepia tones and all that. I mean, it's just, you know, at times it can be done for effect to kind of, you know, do the chemical treating. But I would assume that this film, that the artist would have been shot digitally.
Yeah.
I just would assume that, which I think would make the black and white ization a little bit easier because it's just, you know, running through the computer. And I mean, they still need to kind of, you know, color check all the frames and make sure, you know, the blacks are consistent and, you know, the colors are consistent and
everything
all that.
Like that. So what Buster Keaton shorts did you, because there's so many of them. So can you tell me which ones you pick, or you'd rather leave that as a surprise?
Well, I'll let the cat out of the bag. we're doing Cops.
Okay.
Which is, it's hard to summarize them. You know, there's a girl involved and there's, you know,
cops.
Yeah,
and
cops.
Him running around and yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's Cops. So we're doing Cops. We're doing 1 Week, which is the lovers, the recently married couple, build a house that they ordered from the Sears catalog or whatever the equivalent was. And of course, things go awry. And so the house is not assembled properly, which leads to madcap mayhem and all that. I'm blanking here.
Doing the blacksmith?
No, goat,
the scarecrow.
No.
Lunatic.
Oh, no, geez. Cops 1 Week. I can see him all in my head.
well, that's okay. It'll leave it as a surprise for the audience.
Oh, my.
We're going to take a musical break, okay, and we'll come back, and maybe I'll figure them out what they are. So this is track 3. So
okay.
This is track 3.
It's probably going to be something different.
Entirely different.
Entirely different.
This is another mystery track from Ted Harms, the VOC's Silent Film Harmonic on Coral FM.
When you're a jet, you're a jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. When you're a jet, let them do what they can. You've got brothers around, you're a family man. You're never alone, you're never disconnected. You're home with your own, when company's expected, you're well protected. Then you are set with a capital J, which you'll never forget till they cart you away. When you're a jet, you stay a jet.
Now I know Tony like I know me, and I guarantee you can count him in.
In, out, let's get cracking.
Where are you going to find Bernardo?
It ain't safe to go into PR territory.
We had to dance tonight at the gym.
Yeah, but the gym's neutral territory.
Hey, Rab, I'm going to make nice with him. I'm only going to challenge him.
Great, Daddy-o. So listen, everybody dress up sweet and sharp. Me, Tony, me at the dance at the 10th. And walk tall!
We always walk tall!
We're jets!
The greatest!
When you're a jet, you're the top cat in town. You're the gold medal kid with the heavyweight crown. When you're a jet, you're the swingin'est thing. Little boy, you're a man. Little man, you're a king.
The jets are in gear. Our cylinders are clickin'. The sharks stay clear. Cause every Puerto Rican's a lousy chicken.
Here come the jets like a bat out of hell. Someone gets in our way, someone don't feel so well.
Here come the jets, little world, step aside. Better go underground, better run, better hide. We're drawing the line, so keep your nose hidden. We're hanging a sign, says visitors forbidden, and we ain't kidding.
Here come the jets, yeah,
and we're gonna beat every last bugging gang on the whole bugging street, on the whole bugging ever loving street.
Woo! Okay, Ted.
On the play, they would swear there, but here they used buggin'.
That's right.
But yeah, right. So that was the first one was the Blade Runner intro.
Yeah.
By Evangelos. Another, I mean, Blade Runner and Brazil are, you know, these two great dystopian, futures, which is, as for me as a kid, I just remember thinking, well, what do you mean the future's not all hovercrafts and Flash Gordon and all that. So that was a real mental shift for me as a kid growing up. And thankfully, I mean, Blade Runner was, kind of came out just in time for the whole video VHS age. And
we still have Blade, like it came out on Blu-ray, and we have people renting that. We have people renting Blade Runner all the time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's a movie that it stands the test of time.
Yeah, and even though, you can see the guy wires as, the cop cars lift off and stuff like that, and there's a couple editing flaws in it, as far as the number of replicants that escaped and all that, but it stands up. I mean, it's just really, really good.
Well,
And then after that was West Side Story.
Yeah, that's Jet right. Song, so. Yep. Why that?
I can remember the early 70s. I mean that West Side Story and Sound of Music were kind of somehow emerged as two benchmarks for me. I mean they were on TV regularly and all that, and they were just kicking tunes.
Again, a lot of people thing, but, a lot of people are still watching. They still stand the test of time as well. So
it's good and jazzy, and it is some people would say divorced from real jazz, being orchestral and all that. But both of them, both West Side Story and Brazil, I mean, using a lot of leitmotifs throughout the movie, Brazil soundtrack, it's all just variations of the tune Brazil. Some are done lushly, some are done a little bit more aggressively. And West Side Story, a lot of kind of recurring themes come out and going to get reused. And that kind of helps anchor the movie so that you can kind of anticipate, here's the song.
It does. You know
it already, even though you haven't heard it.
Well, actually the first time I ever heard the Jets was on Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
And I kind of, so when then I actually saw the musical, I went, what? I thought Alice Cooper said this.
I thought
this
Alice
song.
Cooper did this.
No. I think it was on School's Out, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, can you remember the name of the other three shorts?
Yeah,
for Buster
thankfully.
Keaton?
The Playhouse, where he plays about 80 parts all on his own. Probably a very early multi-tracking. The High Sign, where he plays the sharpshooter.
Okay.
And The Goat.
The Goat, which is very funny.
Which is, again, just screamingly so hilarious.
Bald Boy is here, and he's taken over at 6 o'clock. So and he's going to be here till 8 o'clock. And then Rebel Time Music is here from 8 till 10. And then Madison's in from 10 till midnight. So just before we wrap up, can you just give us the 411 on ticket information?
$15 advance if you want to go to the Center and Square box office right now.
Yeah.
You could. You at the door, Friday, 8 p.m.
Yep.
It's when we open, but get there, 7:30-ish. You can buy tickets for $15. Bring a food bank donation, anything. Mm-hmm. And your price drops to $10. And if you're a high school student, you just say, hey, I'm a high school student, and the price drops even further to just a measly $5.
Well, that's very cool.
Eight p.m. at the registry, whatever it is, Frederick Street, 123 Frederick Street.
I think it's 122.
122 Frederick Street.
Yep.
And the Reg is, a local treasure, so everyone should be there as often as they can.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much for dropping in.
Thank you for having
me. And Penny.
And Penny the Wonder Dog is here.
Penny the Wonder Dog is here.
Who has been very quiet the entire time.
She has. She's such a lovely dog. So we're going to, just for fun, because I have this great CD called The Pink Panther's Penthouse Party. we're gonna end off with that. And once again, thank you so much, Ted. And
yes,
all the best on Friday with Buster Keaton Shorts. And Bald Boy is up next on Sound FM. This is Coral FM signing off. Thank you.